Drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, also on YouTube, youtube.com, search ESPN 1000. It's all brought to you by IKEA. The IKEA Sidewalk Sale is on now, sponsor of the ESPN Chicago I-94 Rivalry Trip. We've got a PGA Championship that ended in dramatic fashion to break down today. We'll also talk with Catherine Bellinger, the USGA's Director of Rules. She'll be the on-air rules expert as well for NBC for the U.S. Open on the women's side of things. And you and I, we went out and we struck the ball pretty, you struck the ball pretty well. You were pin hunting for us in our Better Through Birdies fundraiser earlier in the week out at the CDGA Midwest Golf House. And we did it, Mike. We struck 24 birdies on Thursday.
We did.
To lead the pack there, and it was a fun time out there. We got a beautiful day out there, and we hit a lot of shots out there, and it was a lot of fun.
We did, and thank you for coming out and supporting us, and for all the folks out there in Radio Land that supported us, thank you, because every dollar counts. We contributed, our portion ended up totaling up over $112,000 that we raised through the Better Through Birdies Par 3 Challenge. And so you and I are just shy of $5,000, and I know more donations are still coming in. And if people still would like to make a donation, they can by going to betterthroughbirdies.org/par3challenge. Tyler and I played 50 holes each.
Communally?
Yeah, communally, 100 total holes. And we did. We made 24 birdies between the two of us, which is pretty good. But you're a good putter, and somebody to have on my side is a good putter. So I think you and I, yin and yang, quite well together. I hit it close, you knock them in. So that's what good teams do.
It was funny because, I mean, when you're playing a lot of the same holes in repetition, it was the same putt that we were getting like 10, 12 times at some of these holes. I don't know what it was. I mean, there was a stretch where I think back-to-back holes we had to make maybe 18 inches worth of putts combined. I remember that stretch vividly on the first and the second. But every single time you were, if nothing else, consistent, because it was the same shot every single time on all these different holes. It was like the first hole, we were always a little, we were just probably like anywhere between 5 to 10 feet from left to shooting to the right of the hole. And then on the second hole, it was usually you went probably anywhere between 5 to 10 feet past the hole every single time. And it was like you were sticking it close, and then we just had to go out and make a putt.
Well, yeah, and fortunately you always putted first, and I enjoyed watching you knock them in first, so it didn't leave me much to do. So, but it was a lot of fun, and hopefully as a result, I could tell you that my game got better as a result of just hitting so many wedges like that when I played yesterday with my friends up at Sunset Ridge, and got to see Bill Reed and Eric Barnes up there as a CDGA member. Bill Allman hosted us, and what a great club that is. But the point is, I went out and played then a full golf course, and the timing and all of that really lended itself well to a great ball striking day and just a lot of fun yesterday. And especially when you play with caddies at Sunset Ridge, it just doesn't get any better than that.
Nothing better than that. Nope, not at all. All right, let's get into the PGA Championship, because we had a drama filled fourth round down at Valhalla. You were down there for it, and it was a lot of fun seeing how that thing finished out. Xander Schauffele finally breaks through. He gets his first major at the age of 30, but everything that sort of surrounded it made for a great final round. You think about everything that we saw on the Saturday where we saw big charges from guys like Shane Lowry to put himself back in the conversation. Colin Morikawa had a good Saturday. Justin Rose was phenomenal on Saturday as well. Victor Hovland was great. And Bryson DeChambeau just kind of played the same way that he was playing. And Bryson goes low on the Sunday, too. He ends up in a runner-up at 20 under, which, by the way, was the second highest, as Xander broke the record for lowest score in a major. But Bryson would have broken that record as well. However, he just happened to be playing in the same tournament as Xander Schauffele, who did break the record. So we saw not one but two record-setting performances in this major. And Bryson finishes with the runner-up there. But Xander Schauffele, he just went for it, man. And it's something that I think is a little bit different than what we've seen from Xander on Sundays. We've seen a lot of play not to lose. This is the third time this season already that we've seen Xander with a 54-hole lead. The difference this time, he played to win and not to not lose. And as a result, he is the one lifting the trophy.
And there's no doubt about that. You know, it's funny, when we spoke on Sunday as we went off the air and they hadn't teed off yet, we said there is no way Xander can go into this with a prevent defense. Let me just try to make a bunch of pars and occasional birdie here or there. But as we found out later in the press conference afterwards, he had a mark and it was at 22 under. That's when. So how about that? You're at 15 under and you feel like to win this thing, you have to get yourself as the leader to 22 under or play 7 under. He played 6 under, right? So he finishes, breaks the record, as you mentioned. And what I thought was so cool for the Louisvillians and being down there all week is it turned into the proverbial horse race. We had 10 guys that had a chance to win this thing going into the Sunday final round. And it provided some amazing, amazing theater. And it was a birdie fest. It isn't the traditional major championship, as a lot of people were quick to point out. But, you know, at the end of the day, I ask you this question. Did you enjoy it? Because I certainly did. And I think a lot of other viewers did as we look at the TV ratings. But I think it just goes to show you that a major championship doesn't always have to be around par. I mean, I think the U.S. Open has its place, and I think they're rightfully the tournament that should, you know, be about that. The Masters is the Masters, and the British Open is all about what happens with the weather. I think the PGA Championship offers us a little of everything each year. And this year, it was a golf course that was very vulnerable. The weather, no wind, and amazing conditions, including new Zoysia fairways. And I think that change in the grass was enough to make it so that these players could not only score and play well, but ultimately set the records.
Yeah, and you brought up those TV ratings as well. 8.4 is what it peaked at, which is a really strong number, especially when you think about the Masters, what the Masters posted this past year. It was like 9 and change. That right there, I mean, you usually see about anywhere between like a 3 to sometimes even like $5 million decline from the Masters to the PGA, but not this year. It was only less than a mil. Right. So I think that very promising for golf, and obviously tons of stories going into it. You had some big names on the leaderboard at the end. You had everything that was going on with Scottie Scheffler throughout the entirety of it as well. So there were stories to be had. You had the final pairing of Xander and Morikawa. You also had Bryson and Victor Hovland, who were fantastic. I mean, they were right on Xander's tail all afternoon long. There was a portion of the afternoon where Bryson had a lead, Victor had a lead. It looked like one of them could end up being the ones that finished on top, but Xander just kind of kept his foot on the gas, and he had that bogey on 10, but he finishes 3 under after that. He held steady, and it was a fantastic finish for Xander. I mean, he needed that birdie on 18.
He did.
He needed it. Otherwise, they were going to a playoff.
And having played that golf course many, many times, the putt he had, that was a left-to-right breaker. And under all that pressure and duress and stress of the situation, that thing was an eyelash away from lipping out. That thing just slid.
You could tell, too. He said, I am not leaving this short.
Right.
He had no intentions of leaving that ball short.
And he wasn't quite sure at first. He said he saw it go left to right. Then he thought it went right to left, and he goes, this is a terrible spot to be in at the moment. So he goes, I'm just hitting it hard right into the back because that's all I got. And that's what he did, and credit to him. And I think it goes back to also what we said, you know, the Players' Championship and the Masters. You know, is it the third time's the charm? Is he going to take what he learned? And that's what we do. Sometimes our failures are our biggest asset in the long run. We learn from these things. And we saw Brooks do it last year when he won the PGA. He learned from the Masters. And I think Xander did the same thing in another way. And he got the monkey off his back. He is now no longer the best player to have never won a major. And it was just thrilling to see, fun to watch. And I think the pairing, that the Bryson DeChambeau Victor Hovland pairing, those two fed off of each other. They had a ball playing together. You could just feel it and see it, and it was just awesome. And I'll tell you the other thing that would just shock everybody: that Louisvillian crowd, they were pulling for Bryson.
I mean,
not Xander.
I do want to talk about Bryson in just a bit because I think he has done a complete 180 on what his public perception is. But I do want to get, like, I was a little bit worried early for Xander because he had Morikawa in his group and Colin was not putting.
That's made
34 feet and change of putts. Sometimes we see putts that are made of 34 feet on a singular putt.
That's right.
But that was not the case with Colin. He could not putt to save his life. There were so many gettable birdies that he had. I mean, he left scoring on the table. It was a frustrating finish if you were rooting for Colin Morikawa to come out of this thing as a champion, but he could not putt. The greens were his worst enemy. And I thought that might hurt Xander because it almost made me feel like, oh, if Xander sees this, maybe he's not going to have his foot on the gas. But you're right. Having that sort of pacer car behind him, that rabbit chasing him and Bryson and Victor on his tail the entirety of the tournament, and even at times he was the one doing the chasing and not being chased, I thought that was great for Xander. And he knew that he had to score, or otherwise he was not going to win this thing.
Well, and to that point, when you throw 40-plus thousand people onto that back nine, the sounds of the roars echoed through the valleys and the tree line. It just reverberated, and it was some of the loudest roars I've ever heard at a golf tournament. So he knew what was going on in that Bryson Hovland group just by listening. And so he had to keep his foot on the gas. And like he said, I put 22 under as the mark. That's what they were going after, and that's what they felt that they needed to get done because of the fact that you had some firepower right over his, you know, left and right shoulders.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, let's talk a little Bryson because it is now back-to-back very strong showings at majors. Is this the new Bryson DeChambeau that we can expect moving forward? And about his image change as well. We'll do all that when we come back. This is the CDGA Golf Show.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today. We're also brought to you, as always, by Glenview Park Golf Club. I'll be up at Glenview Park later this afternoon.
Oh, nice.
Getting around in, see Ron Caskey and the crew up there. Beautiful day. Plenty of people, I'm sure, going out, getting maybe some first rounds in for the year. I know it's supposed to be a little dicey tomorrow, but it's overall, I think, going to be a good weekend for golf. And this is one of the better golfing weekends of the year. For some people, it's the first time they're getting out all year. Yep. For others, you're banking your third, fourth rounds of the year. I mean, you've played, what, 100 times this week already? I feel like every time I talk to you, it's like, oh, yeah, I played this place. Oh, and then I played this place. And, yeah, you've been certainly logging some miles on those golf clubs of yours. So, it's been a great week to do it.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. Hey, anytime you get to play River Forest Country Club and Sunset Ridge Country Club in the same week, that's a great week, and especially when the sun is shining.
No doubt about that. All right, let's get into some Bryson DeChambeau here because this is a guy who finished runner-up at the PGAs this year. He finished tied for fourth last year, And then in the Masters this past April, finished tied for six, was flirting it with the top of the leaderboard for most of it as well. And there was the whole story about, oh, he had these 3D printed clubs that got approved at the last second, so he used them in the tournament. And I think Bryson, a once upon a time villain in the golfing world, people either loved him or hate him. I think he was maybe the most polarizing golfer at like pre-LIV, the most polarizing golfer there was, because he had a cult following of people who, I mean, they did everything that Bryson did in their own rounds at their local muni or country club or whatever. They were replicating everything about it. And then there were other people who could not stand the thought of Bryson DeChambeau. But I don't know if it's because he's disappeared into the LIV stratosphere for a couple years and poked his head out on the other side in some of these majors now. But I feel like the perception of Bryson DeChambeau has done a complete 180. And I don't know exactly what it is. I can't pinpoint why the public may be flipping its perception on Bryson, but maybe it's because we just don't hear from him all that much anymore. And he's all over social media and YouTube and does all these different challenges and stuff like that. And is this kind of, it almost feels Gen Z influencer golfer, but he's playing on a significant tour and playing in big tournaments. But he has completely flipped the narrative over his public perception in my eyes.
Agreed. And I'm one of those too that really thought he was a bubble or two off of level. I mean, when he first came on the scene he was such an out-of-the-box thinker to the extent that I think traditionalists thought he was trying to come in and change the game in a way that wasn't going to be healthy, wasn't going to be traditional. A lot of people thought he was a crackpot. I mean, it was just like they thought he was off his rocker. And so he was an easy guy from that perspective to not agree with, I think, early on. Not necessarily not like, but just didn't agree with his philosophy and where he was coming at it until it worked.
Yeah.
And then people started looking at him a lot differently. Like, this guy's brilliant. A little odd, but brilliant. And he continued to do his thing. And at times, I think Bryson has been, you know, accused of not having a filter, and that can work in a good way and work against you. And I think, like many of us early in our career, we learn from our mistakes. And I think when he put his shoe in his mouth a few times, I think he's learned from a PR strategy and a branding strategy how to be a bit better. But I think when he took his body to the limits that he did, to try to go on out and flirt with the long drive at the highest level, these world long drive, they call them hitters. So to leave the professional ranks at the highest level and to go try to prove yourself on, I don't know, it's like a circus tour, the world long drive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a set for a very select few in the world, right? But he went out and proved himself out there. He may not have won it, but he proved to those guys that he's every bit as good as him, and he did it through diet. He did it through strength and exercise. But he looked like a world heavyweight boxer. He transformed his body, but then he transformed it back. And now he is an amazing version of all of it together in one piece, and I think he has put it all together. And I think the best thing that could have happened to Bryson is going to LIV, because I think less is more. And now when he has come back and can continue to prove what he's been saying at the mature state that he is in his career, people are falling in love with it. And I'm one of them.
I think the other thing, you talk about the transforming of the body, like there was a certain point in his career where if you heard the term protein shake, you wanted to just,
yes,
punch a hole through the wall, because that's all you heard about with Bryson, about how many protein shakes he was drinking,
right,
for these tournaments and stuff like that. But remember, the other thing with Bryson too was the injuries, and I think the long driving stuff also maybe factored into some of that as well, because you are trying to create so much torque and it's going to lead to these injuries. And then LIV on top of that, you're right, the less is more mentality for a guy who was often injured. And I think Brooks falls into the same category. These guys who deal with some of these injuries, the less is more mentality is really good for them on the LIV tour. And it's the perfect balance for them where they're not playing as much. Now, ultimately probably has to end up being a 72-hole affair eventually, and it looks like LIV could get to that point in the near future. But the fewer tournaments, the fewer miles you're putting on your body over the course of that is significant. And I think it's certainly helping out guys like Bryson. And I think in certain cases, I think less is more is bad for certain guys. I think it's we're hitting a point now with guys like Dustin Johnson. And I hate to say it, but the early returns on John Rahm are not very good so far. I think those are a couple guys that they need to be in it every single week. But for guys like Brooks and Bryson, this is a little bit better for them.
Couldn't have said it any better. And it goes to show you that I think in the long term that the reduced schedule, it's almost like what the NBA guys do with load management, right? And I think that works in golf, just like you said, for some, but others have to have that consistency because mentally they feel like they need it, so then they need it. And others can do exactly what the Brysons and the Brooks can do, and they align themselves in their thinking like big game hunters, and they can get their bodies and their game at a point and at a peak, and they're proving it. And when 11 of 16 guys make the cut at Valhalla, with John Rahm not being one of them, it's kind of showing you that these guys are starting to get comfortable in their own skin, their schedule, their timing, and all the rest of it. So I think that this thing isn't going to go away anytime soon, and I think it's actually starting to play into the strengths of others, and Bryson being one of them.
Yeah, and you bring up Rahm not making the cut at a course that I thought fit his game pretty well.
Very well.
Also, that's why I really liked him going into the PGAs. All right, when we come back, Xander broke through. He is no longer the best golfer without a major. Who is? We will discuss some of that when we come back here on the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by Cog Hill, a pure golf experience, as we talk a little bit more PGA Championship with you here on ESPN 1000, the CDGA Golf Show with you every single week, every single Saturday. Off a little early today for White Sox baseball, on a little early as well. If you missed any of it, check it out on the CDGA Golf Show tab on the ESPN Chicago app. All right, so Xander Schauffele, a tough luck loser many a time in his career, but he finally breaks through and gets his first major. He's up to 2 on the official world golf rankings. And as we sit here after Xander picks up his first major, the conversation now shifts. Who is the best player without a major at the moment? It was Xander for quite some time there. It felt like he was on the precipice time after time after time. But now, is it his buddy, Patrick Cantlay? Is it some of the younger guys like Victor Hovland and Ludvig Åberg, who just haven't really had as many rounds under their belt? Is it a guy who's been around the block and has had some major success, but never really has been, I think, in true contention on a Sunday in Max Homa? Is it guys like Sahith Theegala, another one of those young up-and-coming guys, maybe a Tommy Fleetwood as well? But where would you pin it as the best player without a major right now? I don't think you can really say a LIV guy, because the LIV guys, it kind of feels like, unless maybe you could go Tyrrell Hatton, but the LIV guys, it kind of feels like they went to LIV because they already had a major under their belt.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think as you start to give that question some thought, I think you need to consider how much time they've been able to achieve that first major, because part of me would immediately point to Ludvig as the best player, but he's only played in 2.
Right.
And with one with a bum knee.
Yeah.
So I, you know, immediately I think about Victor, because I think he is the best player of the group that you just mentioned. What he is, you know, maybe not early this season, but what he did last year. And then ultimately, I think the week that he just had by switching his coach, we saw the amazing results thereof. But again, he hasn't had a big enough sample size, I think, to be able to be categorized as such in this vein and in terms of how we're talking about
it. Yeah, I think the way that we're sort of talking about it, it may sound like a dude, hurry up, type of conversation, but it's not. Maybe for some guys, like if you're talking about Patrick Cantlay, who's 32, it's a, all right, let's go. Right. Let's get this thing going. But for a guy like Victor or Ludwig, it's a completely different conversation. It's more of a, it's a when, not if.
Right. To me, it comes down to these two guys. Ricky Fowler.
Okay.
But Ricky, I feel like, has kind of had his time, mm-hmm. kind of fell off the face of the earth, made a resurgence. But I don't know. Did he peak out already? But he has some longevity as you think about how long he's gone without the major. So I bring it back right to one guy that I feel has had enough and still has a formidable amount of his career left with a lot of opportunity ahead of him, and that's Max Homa.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. I think he's one of those guys at 33 right now and a little bit of a late bloomer to a degree too in his career, because mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't really burst onto the major scene until 2020 is the first time he played in all four. And if you think about that, I mean, in those two, well, 2020, I guess he didn't play in all four because the Open did not have a tournament. But 2021 was his first year, actually, where he played in all four, got cut at three of them. So he really hasn't burst onto the scene until as of late, but it is a little bit later in his career. Not to say that he can't go out and win one. He does have a couple of top tens under his belt the last 2 years, especially at the Masters, where he looked really strong. But he's one of those guys where he's kind of newer on the scene in terms of significance and playing at a high level, but he is a little bit up there in age, so it's kind of a, all right, you got to figure this out a little bit quicker than some of these other guys.
No doubt. And as you mentioned, he is 33 years of age, and they say that you peak at 34. And in the arena of majors and that mm-hmm. type of discussion. So Max is right there. And that's why I think, you know, he did turn pro back in 2013. So he's had just over a decade in the professional game. But, you know, some people accuse him of being that, you know, laid back California dreaming kid mm-hmm. and doesn't have that urgency in that. At least.
Well, I think it's kind of similar to Xander. People thought he didn't have that killer instinct on Sunday. Because he seems like such a nice guy, good dude. I mean, you see him on all these different podcasts and stuff like that, and he just seems like the most personable guy in the world, and his social media presence is as good as it comes yep. on the golf sphere as well. And you think that's just not that guy. He doesn't have that killer instinct. But I think there's a lot of guys and major winners who have shed that label. I think one of them in particular, like Justin Thomas, I feel like, people didn't think he maybe had that killer instinct, and he's gone out and done it.
Oh, yeah. No, and I would agree with you. But, you know, Max is starting to get more of that reputation for being one of the funniest guys on social media, dissecting swings and doing things of that nature. So I think people are almost like connecting with Max Homa more of the entertainer
yeah.
than the guy that's out trying to bag major championships.
Right.
And, you know, and again, that's a byproduct of self-branding, you know, social media and, you know, my overall brand and what I do and what I endorse. But, yeah. but Max is really a complete entertainer golfer all in one and having an amazing career at it when you consider he's 10th in the world, 16th in FedEx Cup points. So the guy can flat out play. And I just think he's at that point in his career, age-wise, ability-wise. But I also think he's had his fair share of come so close, almost did it. It's time. And I think they're, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if all of a sudden Pinehurst number two, you see Max Homa right up there at the leaderboard after 36 holes going into the weekend. It would not surprise me in the least.
No, I'm right there with you. In terms of who I think the best of the young crop is right now, guys who maybe just haven't had the time, if you had to order these three guys, all right, Victor, Ludwig, and Sahith, how would you order them in terms of if all three of them end up winning majors in their career, the timeline? Who goes first, second, third among those three? Victor Hovland, Ludwig Åberg, and Sahith Theegala.
Well, it's funny. As I think about these three, right now, the way that their games are, I would have put Sahith having the best game currently with Victor coming in second, only because Ludwig is injured right now. Mm-hmm. If Ludwig wasn't, I'd put him first. But now, given what transpired, I'm kind of looking at Sahith. The guy is the most amazing shot maker, and what I watched him do down at Valhalla was nothing short of incredible. The guy has got a short game and a set of hands that can do things that not many of these guys on the tour can even do. So when you get into situations like at Pinehurst number two, they're going to find themselves having to be as creative as they've ever been in their golfing schedule. That golf course will make them hit some shots that they just don't see from week to week just because of the uniqueness of what Pinehurst number two offers. And with that being said, I would put Sahith as the favorite of those three to win next at the next major.
Interesting.
That would be who my pick would
be. Sahith is very, like, yeah, he's been in the hunt of things, some top tens, and he's fun to watch. Like, you're right. He has that short game that is immaculate. And he's just got such a great swing. In terms of how I would order them, it just feels like Victor may have unlocked something last weekend. And if that's the case, if we take out the chunk of Victor's career that has gone from January through 2 weeks ago, and we take that out, I think it's hands down we're saying Victor. And he may have removed that portion of his career based on what we saw down in Louisville last week. He looks like the old Victor. And that's a guy who's been knocking on the door a couple of times now. I mean, he finished fourth at the Open in 22, had a pair of top tens last year, including a runner-up at the PGAs. He finished third this past weekend and very easily could have won it. He's had a couple of those tournaments where he was in the thick of it on Sunday and just doesn't know how to win the big one quite yet, but he did win the BMW last year, which was a great way for him to close out his year. And I think we may be starting to get there with Victor. If he can rechannel his end of 2023, for me, then it's hands down Victor Hovland. But if not, then I'm with you. I think it is Sahith.
Well, and I think the key statement or the key word in the statement you just made was if he unlocked it, and you are right, if he has, oh, by hands down, he's my pick. I just want to see a bigger sample size. Mm-hmm. I want to see what happens at Pinehurst to see if he truly has unlocked this. The thing that concerns me a bit is that he's not playing this week. And you would think maybe I should go to Colonial and keep this thing going and see what happens next. But he didn't. So I just want to see a bigger sample size. But otherwise, if so, oh, no doubt he is going to be the next player to have won. But Sahith, he absolutely impressed me to no end, and I'm a huge, huge fan of him now.
Yeah, the way that he has emerged onto the scene these last couple of years and what he did at the Masters a year ago and the way that he's just been, he's been very consistent, very even-keeled. Everything about him has been, I mean, his rise has been a pleasure to watch just because, I mean, he was a featured character on Full Swing as well in that first season. I think that's where he really came onto the scene and he burst onto a lot of people's radars then. And then he's just played really good golf. Like, we've seen that show sort of make and break careers. In the case of a Sahith Theegala, it's certainly done the making portion because he's backed up his time on the screen there. And he looks like one of these guys who's on a star trajectory right now with the way that he's played and the way that he's performed and just kind of gets in the rounds. I mean, you look at the official world golf rankings right now and the events played. I mean, he's got 52. There's no one else. 52 is the most that you see out of any of these guys. It's Sahith, it's Fitzpatrick, it's Tommy Fleetwood and Wyndham Clark. Like, those are the guys that are in that echelon now. So
no doubt. And I think you used the word star. And that's what he is, because let me tell you, watching him when he leaves the green, going to the tees, or when he is at the practice range, he acts like a star. He is so good with the kids. He is so good with people. He's going to be great for golf.
No doubt about it. It seems like we are entering a really good period of golf where it is like the relatability. That's another thing with Bryson. Did you see the video of Bryson too?
Oh, top notch.
How about Bryson DeChambeau, all right? One time labeled as the villain of golf, who throws a ball to a kid, an adult
intercepts it,
takes the ball from the kid, and Bryson, he's making the turn from 9 to 10 when this is happening right
in
now.
In a major championship.
In a major. And Bryson stops in his tracks and barks this guy down and says, hey, that's not for you. It's for the kid. Give it back. And just lays down the law. How about that from Bryson? Yeah.
And I think he went, hey, to the guy, not like once. I think it was about 8 times. Yeah. So it was, you know, in his craw, that was the most important thing at that moment to him,
right,
is to make sure that that boy got his golf ball. And the smile and the face that kid, it spoke volumes to the whole situation. And sure enough, he went on and does his business and does it in grand fashion. And once again, endeared himself. And that video went all over the world. And again, he just won over so many fans by doing so.
The protocol is the same in baseball as it is in golf.
It is.
Give it to the kid.
You
catch a foul ball, you catch a golf ball from a player, you give it to the kid.
You do. And we chalk that up to that Kentucky bourbon stuff where that adult acted a little bit out of character, I think. But he felt guilty, he gave the ball back, and everybody was happy.
Yep, no doubt about that. All right, when we come back, a little bit of a Scottie Scheffler update as well. Everything that went down in Louisville. By the way, he was fantastic on Sunday.
Yes, he was.
But we'll discuss what Scottie did. Also, maybe dive into the Colonial as well, taking place down in Texas. This is the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, talking golf with you till 10:30 right here on ESPN 1000. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. Taylor is in Hyde Park. What's up, Taylor?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Hey, Taylor.
Happy Saturday.
Good, good. I'm actually headed to Ridge Country Club for a 11 a.m. tee time.
Beautiful.
So, wish me luck there.
Love Ridge Country. Love Ridge Country Club.
Oh, it's a tight fairway.
So
it's not
tight.
Not a very long course, but it's very, very tight.
Very
tight course. So I really enjoy playing there. So one of my favorite guys on the tour to watch has been Tony Finau. I know he's 34 years of age. You know, in 18, 19, and 20, he was like almost every major in a top 5 finish. He was on that list of on the cusp of guys to break out, and he never just really did. So do you think, you know, him winning a major at this point for being 34 and having his best years maybe 3-4 years ago behind him, do you think there's any chance he has a shot at actually winning and pulling through one of these majors?
Yeah, it's a good question, Taylor. And Tony Finau is an interesting one because – you're right. Taylor's right. Like, he had his time between 2018 through 2021. But you can always, it's the one thing that brings me back is what Phil did at the PGA Championship a couple years ago. And the way that he won while he was in his 50s, and just kind of makes me think, yeah, like, you could do it. Now, Tony's obviously never reached the heights that Phil reached. And that would leave me a little bit concerned. Like, what's it going to look like when Tony Finau's in a final pairing at this point? That's a different level of pressure when you're the last one going off. You hear the roars from all around the golf course. You're the entirety of your round. What's that going to look like for Tony Finau? He's a guy who he seems undaunted by big moments, but Taylor's right. Like, he has not broken through. Are his best days behind him?
You know, you just don't know. But, I mean, I'll tell you what, Tony is an amazing athlete. So the age of 34, to me, he's got the body of more like a 20-something-year-old. He's not trending towards 40. He's still the one of the more fit, athletic humans out there. And, you know, his journey to where we are on the tour is a little bit different. You know, he kind of came up the hard way back in 2007. I mean, he had to come on to the, you know, PGA Tour Canada, and then he went to the Web.com Tour. And it wasn't until like 2016 he had his first success with the Puerto Rico Open. And
well, think about his upbringing too. Like, you don't get a lot of golfers out of Utah.
No, either. That's a very good point as well. And you know, he, as Taylor said, he had a stretch that was remarkable. And you know, he's been very consistent on the tour, and he's played in 29 majors, but he's had, you know, a third place, four top fives, and 10 top 10 finishes. So he does appear on my list, as we made a list between the breaks. Tony Finau was somebody on my list we never talked to, and I'm glad Taylor called in with Tony, because I think Tony still has a window of opportunity that is as long and as large as anyone, only because the guy is just in amazing shape. And he's an athlete first and then became a golfer. And I think that's going to work to his advantage as he ages gracefully into his 30s.
Yeah, hopefully it does. Because, yeah, we do sometimes see the body breakdown. And Tony, I'm trying to think through, but you never really hear much about injuries with him.
No, in fact, he was the guy who made a hole-in-one, if we remember, at the par 3 Masters tournament on the Wednesday of the Masters, and jumped up in the air, dislocated his ankle, and then turned around, and they thought he was going to withdraw, and he went out and became the first round leader with a broken ankle.
Yeah.
So this is a guy that, as I say, he has got more talent, you know, in one finger than any of us have in our body. He is a extraordinary athlete, and Taylor is spot on. And Tony's a guy to watch on, and quite conceivably could be the guy wearing the crown.
Yeah. Real quick update to what happened with Scottie Scheffler. They have moved back his hearing that's going to take place down in Louisville. But everything else that we're starting to hear about this, Brian Gillis, the officer that arrested Scottie Scheffler, has become more and more suspect, and it seems more and more likely that Scottie's going to end up on the right side of this thing, as the police chief, Jacqueline Gwynn Villarroel, has kind of gone out and talked a little bit about how Detective Gillis not wearing his body camera is a part of the policy of the Louisville Police Department. So that is a big strike against him. He has been reprimanded in the past for taking a drunk person and just going into a parking lot and spinning donuts. I mean, the whole joke on social media all week was that this guy is straight out of Superbad, the movie, like,
yes.
And what he did with what he's been doing with his conduct in the past. And there's been new videos that have surfaced as well, a different angle, and everything's starting to look like Scottie's going to turn out okay out of this thing.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is, though, they extended and postponed this hearing to June 3rd. And, you know, as I say, I think common sense is going to prevail. And to your point, all the evidence is pointing that Scottie is who we thought he is. He's just a great golfer and a guy that, you know, was in the wrong place.
Not here for any trouble.
Yeah. He was just there to work out and play golf.
Yep. All right, when we come back, we will talk with Catherine Bellinger, the rules director for the USGA. She'll be on the call for the U.S. Women's Open as the rules expert. We'll discuss everything about that with her when we come back. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort. Experience a Michigan masterpiece. Let's head on out to the Jersey Mike's hotline. Jersey Mike's, a sub above, where we find the USGA's Director of Rules of Golf Championships. It's Catherine Bellinger. She joins us here on the CDGA Golf Show. Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
We're fantastic. Beautiful day here in Chicago. Lots of golf rounds going to be put in this afternoon across our great city and the surrounding areas. But I have to start with you as a director of rules. Were you always a rule follower as a kid?
Yes, I always was a rule follower. My family is not surprised that this is the career path I've ended up in.
Well, Catherine, it is so great to have you on the air with us. You know, for those listening, you know, Catherine is the pride and joy of St. Charles, Illinois. She's one of our own, right? And I learned a fellow Duhawk from Loras College. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't?
I thought I knew I was. I didn't realize you were a Duhawk.
Oh, no. I'm saying you are. You're the pride and joy from there. No, absolutely. So, so tell me, how did you get to where you are? Share the journey. Were you a competitive player at St. Charles High School and, you know, tournament golf? Or how did your path lend you to this position? Because let's face it, rules aren't easy.
No, they're not. But yeah, I was a golfer growing up. My dad played and I got into it at a young age. I played all 4 years. I went to St. Charles East, played there, continued on playing at Loras College for a few years out in Dubuque. I was majoring in sport management, wanted to work in golf, but honestly, I had not a lot of knowledge about what you could do within golf administration. And it was actually an internship I did with the Illinois Junior Golf Association just before my senior year that really opened my eyes to just all the possibilities, whether it was, you know, a golf association, PGA section, USGA, just all these different avenues you could pursue. And I was fortunate enough to find a job with the USGA in the rules department. I started about six weeks after I graduated college, and I've been there ever since. So really fortunate that I kind of stumbled my way into it a little bit, but I've really enjoyed it.
Catherine Bellinger with us. She is the USGA Director of Rules, and you're also going to be a rules expert for the U.S. Women's Open as well. How is that, and we see it sometimes from tournament to tournament, but the incorporation of a rules expert, what's the most exciting part of that for you?
There's a lot of parts that are exciting. I think for me, one of the things is just that you don't really know what's going to come up. You're just, you know, kind of watching the broadcast and you're waiting for something to come up, and you've just got to be ready to jump in and, you know, do your best to make it easy to understand for those at home.
So, and wasn't your very first telecast in doing this role with NBC right in Wheaton, Illinois at the Chicago, you know, at Chicago Golf for the U.S. Women's Open? Wasn't that your first one? And if it was, how nervous was that? Because to your point, you just don't know what's going to happen, and you've got to be prepared for anything.
Yes, that was the first one I did. It was the inaugural Senior Women's Open that was hosted at Chicago Golf Club. I was very fortunate to get to work that event, as those in Chicago know. I was so nervous. I remember I just had like my rule book open in front of me and was waiting and waiting. And I don't think the first day I even said anything. So I just, you know, was there. I think I did get to speak a couple of times, and just kind of once you get the first one out of the way, you settle in a little bit. But, I mean, the nerves are always there for the first broadcast when you go live.
Yeah, it's almost like a relief pitcher in baseball. You just don't know when they're going to go to you. You don't know what situation you're going to be put into as well. They can throw you anything.
Yes, yeah, you have to be ready at all times. And you just, you know, want to be there to try and make it easy to understand for those at home and maybe give them something to take away that they can use when they go out to play golf.
So I know a lot of people look at the rules as very dry, very boring, but you've had to have some of the most memorable events in conducting a ruling or a situation that may have been memorable or maybe funny or toughest. Like, is there something that stands out more than any other that you can say, oh, one time this happened?
Yeah, there's definitely a few that stick out. I'm trying to think back. I had a recent ruling where I had a ball that had come to rest inside of a spectator's little like drawstring bag that they had with them. So that one was a little bit interesting, just, you know, trying to fish the ball out of the bag and give that player free relief to keep going. But yeah, that golf ball can come to rest in some funny places out on the course.
I'm trying to think too, like, so when you go out and you play your rounds, how strict are you on rules for yourself and for the rest of the group that you're in?
Well, unfortunately, I don't play a lot of golf these days myself. Trying to be better about that. One of these years I'm going to get it. But when I go out, I mean, I just want to go out and have fun at this point. So I'm just out there to enjoy the round, enjoy who I'm playing with, and just have a good day.
And when you're not on NBC and, you know, showcasing rules to the rest of the, you know, television world, what are you doing day in and day out at the USGA?
My focus is on our rules operations at championships, so how we go about getting the golf course ready in terms of the marking, the notice to players, the rule sheet that we put together, how our staff does their job. We're fortunate to have a bunch of volunteer referees who will come in from all over the country to work our championships. And so also just focusing on how can we help those individuals continue to improve, get better, because all of those things go into improving the overall player experience at a championship.
Catherine Bellinger with us on the Jersey Mike's hotline, as she is the USGA's Director of Rules of Golf Championships. So a lot of sports, it comes up. We see little things here and there that pop up every single time there's a weird ruling or a weird call, and there oftentimes is advocate for change of rules and how can we tweak this to improve the game. Is there a certain rule, as someone who is so deep into the rule book, is there a certain rule that you personally would like to see changed?
That's a good one. I don't know if there's one that stands out. You know, the rules a few years back in 2019 went through, you know, a massive overhaul. And, you know, one of the big focuses was trying to reduce penalties where it makes sense. So I think that's something that we're just always trying to look at, that balance of, you know, is the penalty kind of enough for what the player did, or is the penalty maybe too much, and trying to strike that balance between the two. So that's always something that I have in the back of my mind as I'm working through different situations.
So, Catherine, we know you're on site now at Lancaster Country Club out in Pennsylvania, getting ready for this week's United States Open. Tell us, like, what are you doing today in the next few days to get ready for the world's greatest women, including Nelly Korda, trying to get her seventh win in eight tries? What goes through your mind now in terms of getting the golf course set up and getting ready for this week?
Right now, we're focusing a lot on the course marking. So for all of the penalty areas, making sure we've got lines down, they're in the right spot, out of bounds, making sure all of that is marked. So we've got a team actually out there right now working on that. I'm going to join them in a little bit when we're done chatting. And then the other focus is our local rule sheet for the week. So just trying to make sure that any, you know, special cases that we have out here at Lancaster, we've got covered in our rule sheet. And then in the next couple of days, we'll start getting ready for our volunteer referees to arrive on site. And then it's just helping them to make sure that they've gone out, seen the course, if they have any questions on how we're treating certain things, just making sure that they feel prepared to go out and work the championship.
Catherine Bellinger with us, as she will be the rules expert on the NBC broadcast for the U.S. Women's Open. We do have someone on the line who has a rules question for you, Catherine. So we're going to put you on the spot here. Walt in LaGrange has a question he has for you. What's going on,
okay,
Walt? Say hello to Catherine.
Oh, okay. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Walt. What's your question?
Okay, here's the situation. Two guys are teeing off on a par three. They're hitting right into the sun. The green is undulating. The pin is in the undulation. They both hit what appear to be really nice shots, tracking right at the pin. They get up to the hole. They find one ball in the cup and one ball 3 inches away. They're both playing, let's say, tieless ones. They both cleaned their balls before they teed off. They're spotless. What's the ruling?
And nobody put an identifying mark on their golf ball, Walt?
No, unfortunately not. That's the rub. So that's what I'm going to give you.
Oh, this isn't a good one, Walt. And unfortunately, I'm going to have a tough answer for these players. They are both going to have a lost ball since they can't identify which ball is theirs, and they are going to have to play again from the teeing area.
Isn't that cruel?
I said it wasn't going to be a good answer.
But you know what, though? That goes to show you why you have to take care of those housekeeping things at the first tee. Isn't that right, Catherine?
Absolutely, yeah. Generally, when you go out to play an event, that's one of the first things that the starter will mention to you. You know, do you have an identifying mark on your ball? And something, throw a little Sharpie dot, because when that type of situation comes up, you'll be very happy that you did that.
You know, we lost Walt on the line, but I wanted to know if that was a real situation he had encountered or if he was just trying to stump someone.
Yeah, I know. I want to know if that really happened.
Catherine, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you taking some time, and we will be watching you on for the U.S. Women's Open. Looking forward to it.
Catherine, good luck.
Awesome, guys. Thank you. Enjoy it. Should be fun.
Yeah, it'll be a great week.
Catherine Bellinger on the Jersey Mike's Hotline, the USGA's Director of Rules of golf championships. She will be the rules expert. So just like you see in all these other sports, like you see with Terry McCauley in Sunday Night Football, you see it with John Perry in the NBA, like they have these rules experts. And I think it's important to have it on a golf broadcast because you will oftentimes see situations where you're like, how does that apply? And then, and listen, like you play the sport as well. It's not like basketball or football where we're going to go out, find an empty patch of field, and throw the pigskin around. There are rules that you can apply to your everyday life, so I think it is always interesting when they do incorporate rules experts in the golf broadcast as well.
No doubt, and I think it has added quite a bit to the telecast in terms of the content anyway, and I think it makes for a better broadcast overall. But it's fun having somebody like Catherine, who is from St. Charles. And, you know, parents out there, you have kids that are aspiring to be in, you know, golf in some way, shape, or form. This just goes to show you that interning, like, at the Illinois Junior Golf Association, and that's how she got started.
Yeah.
She started out working rules at junior golf tournaments in Illinois, and now she's going to be representing us on NBC next weekend on the telecast. So good for her. I love success stories like that.
Yep, no doubt about that. All right, when we come back, let's check in with what's going on at the Colonial as well. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up North Michigan Golf without the drive.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.
Segment brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, talking golf with you every single Saturday throughout the golf season right here on ESPN 1000. Off a little early today, so if you missed anything, check it out on the ESPN Chicago app. Just find that CDGA Golf Show tab, and you can take us on the go in your pocket with the ESPN Chicago app. You want to join us, 312-332-3776. We've talked a lot of PGA Championship and everything and all the drama that we saw last weekend down at Valhalla. I do want to get your full experience because you were there for 4 days, Mike, down in Louisville. So we'll do that at 10 o'clock. Get everything that you saw that went down from, when did you get there? You got there Monday or Tuesday?
Yeah, Tuesday night.
Tuesday all the way through Sunday. So yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing all of that from you. But taking place right now, it is the Charles Schwab Challenge down at Colonial Country Club, Fort Worth, Texas. If memory serves me correct, this used to be more of a tune-up for a major as opposed to out of a major. Am I remembering that correctly?
It was. It kind of was a tune-up, you know, before the U.S. Open a little bit. But yeah, it's been, and it was a classic tournament forever because, you know, it's Hogan's Alley. It's in Dallas, Fort Worth. And in fact, they have also the Byron Nelson almost in the same kind of community. And that was played a couple of weeks earlier. But, you know, the unfortunate thing, and now we're starting to see the ramifications of such, is how golf has changed. And, you know, when I say they're only playing for $9.1 million this week,
right.
I mean, I say that tongue-in-cheek because
the pre-Tiger era scoffs at that.
I mean, I remember doing the 1993 PGA Championship, and everyone was aghast when we raised the purse to $3 million. And so that was for a major. So, you know, and now they're accustomed to playing for $20 to $25 million.
Yeah, these elevated events
have, you know, and that's what's damaged an event like Colonial a little bit in terms of the star power. You do have some of the guys like Scottie Scheffler, who's quite frankly enjoying sleeping in his own bed this week, and I think the results are beginning to show here as a result of his play. But Colonial is one of those classic narrow golf courses. And, you know, for the player's perspective, it's probably they consider the most user-friendly greens out on the PGA Tour. So you should watch some good putting exhibitions going on from our leaders this whole entire weekend, because these greens are a fan favorite among the guys on tour.
Well, even though it's not one of these elevated signature events, it being in Dallas to the Fort Worth area is helpful, because you do get the Texas players in it every like this is Spieth's tournament, it feels like, every single year. And obviously Scotty's a part of it now, and Scotty's playing this week. So right now your leader is Davis Riley. He is 10 under. He is 2 strokes ahead of Hayden Buckley and Pearson Cootie. Sungjae Im at 6 under. Keegan Bradley also at 6 under, along with Sepp Straka. Some of the big names, Scottie Scheffler is 3 under. He's tied for 15th right now. And Colin Morikawa also in that group at 3 under. You get to the tied for 25th. It's where you find Jordan Spieth, Zach Johnson there as well. Justin Rose at 1 under. He is tied for 35th. We do have a couple of local guys in this tournament as well. Nick Hardy, he just teed off. A little bit of a rough go for Nick so far. He's 3 over at the moment. And then Doug Gim, also participating in the tournament. He is through 2 today. He is even for the tournament. So Doug Gim having himself a nice little year. He had a nice finish at the PGA Championship.
Yes, he did. Doug Gim, I was hoping...
Tied for 35th.
Yeah, I was hoping he'd finish a little stronger, because I think he's got that game. But it's fun to watch his maturation process and becoming, you know, a top-notch PGA Tour player.
Yeah, you look at what he did at the PGA's, his 8 under, tied for 35th. I mean, he's in the same lump of tied for 35th as Max Homa and Hideki Matsuyama there.
Yeah.
But you're right, like, he played all 4 rounds that he played were under par, and like most people did that this past week. And if you look at it, the shots to par broke a record by a significant portion at a major. I think it was like minus 231, and like up next was like plus 80 something.
Yeah.
So it was by like over 300 strokes. But Doug Gim, all 4 rounds under par, finished 8 under, and he went 69, 68, 70, 69 to close it out. So everything pretty consistent there. It just kind of shows he was playing his game out there.
Oh, no doubt he was. And, you know, you use the word consistency, and you go back to Colonial, and I'm looking at Scottie Scheffler yesterday. He shoots 65 in the second round. Now, get this. He has played, they say, 12 rounds or 12 tournaments. Mm-hmm. In the second round, 8 times, he has shot 66 or better. That is why Scottie Scheffler is always at the top of leaderboards.
Yeah.
His second round record is unbelievable.
Right.
And, you know, he goes out with a paltry 72 to open up, but bam, 65. And you know, while I won't say he is the favorite to win this, well, he's the favorite to win this.
Yeah.
Because even though he's not in the lead, I mean...
7 strokes off the lead.
Yeah. But I still think he's going to be right there come tomorrow night.
Yeah. He certainly could. He certainly could. All right, when we come back, I do want to hear your full trip down in Louisville, documenting the 4 days of the tournament, as well as a couple others, and everything that went down from start to finish. You're not going to want to miss this. Mike will give his full report of everything that took place down in Louisville. This segment brought to you by Fox Bend. We'll be back on the CDGA Golf Show.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.